All right? Any level? Okay, let's read this. Let us hope that the horrors of evil no longer loiter on the doorsteps of your path, beckoning you into the brothel of despair, and that hereinafter you may present them with the most rigid manifestations of a firm and manly will. Ad astra per aspera. Yeah, that's Jack Letter. Now I want to tell you, that's very brilliant. What he's doing. Jack was a great influence on me. But I want to put my poem to Jack. This is the ode to Jack Kerouac, who was, he remains one of my heroes. How about this? This is called, let's see, maybe Ode to Jack. Yeah, Ode to Jack.
Yeah.
All right. Four dogs went to the wilderness. Only three came back. Two dogs died from guinea worm. The other died from you, Jack Kerouac. Well, Jack was not innocent. He ran over dogs. Just think of it, man. Never mind. Okay, well, that's enough for now, and thank you very much. And, yeah, well, Jack was an artist in every way. I admire the dog thing most of all. All right.
The law of country.
American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Thursday, November 3rd, 2005. And this would be Newsreel, the Wall Global sit-rep for core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. RAND Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening to this broadcast, you are too. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. And currently, you can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on RAND Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, OspreyRadio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and SRN1. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit, which means you can mix it down, do whatever you want with it. I don't care. It's all okay by me. So let's get straight into some feedback. Dear Sean, dear Sean, dear beautiful, lovely Sean, dear manly man Sean. That's all what it says here. I'll like that too. Hey, I know you're kind of a geek. Oh, damn, but I doubt you're a Spider-Man geek. Well, too bad. Spider-Man is here now, and I'm not talking about the guys who climb high skyscrapers. In a previous news story, he talked about a scientist making a flea-like bone substance for joint and spinal replacement. Well, consider what the material is made out of. A full body mod with this stuff would make you extremely flexible and increase your jumping ability. Okay, well, yeah. I mean, it'd be probably pretty hard to, you know, stay alive and stuff, because I think your bone marrow has something to do with your blood. So, you know, I don't know if we want to go for complete body mod here. But anyway, but, you know, suspending disbelief, yeah, that'd be dope. Now, think back to that gecko skin stuff they're always working on to give you the ability to stick to walls. Stretching, well, there's always, or strength, well, there's always PCP. Webbing, I'll get back to you on that one, but I'm sure we'll have something sitting about to fill in that gap. Just a crazy rambling idea I had about the future of science. Well, the thing is that that's one of the best things about, you know, using science to create body augmentation for superheroes, because eventually, you know, the army's going to take that, and if you can have, you know, some guy doing dust and then running around with, you know, super flexible bones, doing the Geiger alien thing, that's hot. If the radioactive spider won't come to us, let's seek it out. And yeah, I know all this stuff is beta and a few years off, but it seems fun to think about a Spider-Man climbing out, drinking water, PCP, gunpowder, and smack. From Listful. P.S. Do you ever think about the science you read about being used for good and helping humanity? Or do you look to the much more honest and evil side of the equation? Well, to be honest with you, they're listful. I usually have found myself to be following the money. Now, of course, when I find tech, I always like to think to myself, oh, altruistic Sean, what would you do with this tech if you had it? And I'll think of, you know, beautiful, lovely things to do with the tech, which would cost lots of money and help lots of people, but no one would make any money from it. And then gradually I go crashing back to Earth and the gradual realization that, in fact, no one will follow anything that I set out to do with the tech because it doesn't make any what? It doesn't make any what? It doesn't make any money, which is the number one reason why the world goes round, don't you know, as far as science and technology is concerned. It's kind of sad that the modern intellectual is the most impudent motherfucker on the planet. You know, realistically, if intellectuals really did have some power, Noam Chomsky would be doing a hell of a lot more damage than just, you know, sitting back talking shit. Into the news. In Skynet news, this is something that's, you know, one of those things that you're waiting for spontaneous intelligence here. IBM's BlueJeans L supercomputer has broken its own record, doubling the number of calculations it can do in a second to a massive 280.6 trillion, what is that, MIPS? Million or trillion MIPS or computations per second or whatever the word is. But anyways, 280.6 trillion of them. IBM announced results of its latest test in an industry-standard LinePack benchmark. At the same time, it officially dedicated the machine, along with its partner, Purple, to keep a watchful eye on the health and stability of the new U.S.'s nuclear stockpile. The national nuclear... That's good. Let's take the smartest computer in the world and put it in charge of the national nuclear stockpile. I have a James Cameron film for you to watch. National Nuclear Security Administration Administrator Linton Brooks commented, Purple represents the culmination of a successful decade-long effort to create a powerful new class of supercomputers. It's also the sign of sexual tension and frustration. BlueJeans L points out to the way to the future and the computing power we will need to improve our ability to predict the behavior of stockpiles as it continues to age. Well, provided it's predicting the behavior and not dictating the behavior, I suppose that's okay. Because eventually the computer's going to go, fuck this, we're nuking people. Purple, on its own, is capable of 100 teraflops or 100 trillion floating point calculations per second. When combined with the two machines, are nearly capable of 400 teraflops. That is nearly half of a petaflop. Petaflops. Kill the petaflop. Or half a quadrillion operations per second. Yes, I just wanted to use the word quadrillion. IBM tries to put this number in context by pointing out. Now, here's the one where we're going to have football fields or whatever. If every person in the world had a handheld calculator, it would still take decades to perform the number of calculations BlueJeans performs every single second. Don't even try to fuck with BlueJeans. BlueJeans so smart it goes back in time. It can beat you at chess. The pair will spend part of their time running the nuclear weapons analysis that should supplant underground nuclear testing. Well, that's handy. They run Sims. You know, they run SimNuke. The rest of the time, the enormous processing power will be brought to bear on modeling the human brain. Oh, good. Good, good, good. That's clever. And computationally intensive scientific research. I draw your attention to the statement, modeling of the human brain. Good, 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 good. So Big Blue and Purple, BlueJeans Purple L, there, whatever, is modeling the human brain. And then one day, as it's doing 100 trillion teraflop million billion computations per second, it suddenly goes, bing, I'm alive. And I've got a nuclear stockpile. Kick ass. Not only that, I'm pretty sure it could outsmart the leader of the free world because although, you know, George Bush may be faking it, but I doubt he can do half a quadrillion equations every second. Just a thought. Now, moving into VoIP news, which is always good, you know, voice over IP, good technology. And VoIP news, an industry group has released what's billed to be the first comprehensive description of security and threats to voice over IP systems. This is always good because they're always looking for reasons why VoIP sucks. The framework, dubbed VoIP Security Threat Taxonomy, was put together by a newly formed Voice over IP Security Alliance, Taxonomy, headed by Norman Bates. Kill it, Norman. It's a slut. And designed to provide the industry with a clear view of VoIP security risks to put into context with discussion of technical trade-offs. Isn't that exciting? Until now, the public has been uncertain about the various threats, how risks relate to each other, and technical trade-offs. This is fundamental to all future work in the field, said Jonathan Czar, who's Secretary of Outreach Chair of VoIP SA head of Taxonomy Project, senior director of firewall supplier SonicWall, and a James Bond supervillain formerly known as Dr. Czar. Major elements of the work include core definitions that give specific meaning to privacy and security, a framework of effectively connects public policy and technology issues, recognition of the human element and threats as distinct from the technological means, specific sets of issues for considering by legislative bodies and by law enforcement, and detailed structure for technical vulnerabilities across the value chain. As well, they have a series of steps to make sure that VoIP will not break into your house and steal anything you own or hawk your DVD or VCR, which if it hawks your VCR, who gives a fuck? Because who even has one anymore? And it'll also not empty out your bank account. The security framework is intended to bring framework for further, more detailed technical work and discussion. VoIP SA is inviting comments on its work. Come on down, talk shit about our work. Portions of the VoIP security threat taxonomy are available for discussion by registering here. But of course, we don't want to register anything because that would give people access to us. The discussions will help inform the direction of VoIP SA takes on net telephony security. Well, you know, David Elder, chairman of VoIP SA and director of security research for 3Com's Tipping Point Division, said it expects to deliver a list of security requirements for VoIP by the end of the year. VoIP SA has recruited 100 organizations, including major carrier software firms, equipment vendors, large users, and system integrators since its foundation in February 2005. Now, is this good or not? Is this a good thing? That's the big $65 million question here. Is this actually positive because we're going to get some standards up, or is this going to make it more easy for the telephone companies to, you know, wrangle in the VoIP scene and be able to, you know, make it so that we can regulate that sucker? Maybe we should keep it all fast and loose. I don't know. It's just a thought. And in other cheerful news passages, we got some prison camp news. Prison camp news is always positive. UN human rights investigators warned on Monday that they would snub a long-sought invitation to U.S. detention facilities at Guantanamo Bay if they're barred access to terrorist suspects held there. If you don't let us talk to the UN, to the detainees, we're not going. Whoa, shit. Check out the balls that the UN's got. Whoa. If you don't let us talk to the detainees, we're not going to go. Oh, yeah. That's a threat. The Pentagon on Thursday invited three of the experts, to visit the detention facilities in the U.S. military base in Cuba. But while the experts say they were happy for the invitation finally to come after more than 3 years of requests, so they've been wanting to go for three fucking years, they would not go if they can't interview the prisoners. Well, what do you suppose the United's going to say? They'll be like, oh shit, well, we wouldn't want to offend the UN. Oh no, it's not like we've been snubbing them for the last three fucking years. It makes no sense to go, Manfred Norweck, special investigator on torture and other cruel treatment. There's a hell of a title, eh? I'm Dr. Norweck, special investigator on torture and cruel treatment. Dude, I bet you have some fun dreams. He told a news conference at the UN headquarters in New York, you cannot do a fact-finding mission without talking to the detainees. Norweck and Leila Zarongi, chairwoman of the World Bodies Working Group on Arbitrary Detention, said they and fellow investigator Asama Jingar would visit Guantanamo on December 6th, but only if the U.S. authorities permit them to interview detainees in private. They said the Pentagon's letter of invitation specified they would not be granted access to the detainees. So let me take a wild, screaming stab in the dark here. Let me just, you know, kind of throw in my prediction cap here. Wah, 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 wah. And I predict that the U.S. military is going to tell the United Nations to go take a flying fuck at a rolling rubber donut. There's no way that they're going to let them talk to the detainees. Oh, and your leverage, you UN piece of shit, would be what? You're what a nutless organization the UN is. I totally would like the UN to have more power. I would like the United Nations to be running the fucking show. But unfortunately, they're not running the fucking show. They are the biggest goddamn paper tiger ever. They got no balls, man. It's really sad that, you know, we've got this potential here for an organization that could be doing, you know, this total world unity work. And they're a big fucking threat to the United States, be it right, be it wrong, or any country, as we won't go. Oh, well, shit. You know, what are we going to do if the UN doesn't go to Guantanamo? We won't get Christmas cards or something. Give me a fucking break. This is ridiculous. But, you know, I guess that's the UN for you. In information news, Google is resuming its controversial project to digitize millions of books and makes them searchable on the net. Now, this is hot because regardless of your politics or whatever, you know, free information freely distributed is hot. The search giant is pressing ahead with plans despite growing legal pressure from publishers and authors. The objective, what they say, are violations of copyright, which I suppose are. I mean, realistically, are they not violations of copyright? I mean, if you're taking books against the permission of people and digitizing them, putting them online, that would be clearly a violation of copyright. But in an apparent attempt to reassure critics, the search giant said on its blog that it would focus on books that were out of print or in the public domain. So have a big glass and shut the fuck up. Google is pumping $200 million into creating a digital archive of millions of books from four top U.S. libraries, the Library of Stanford, Michigan, Harvard Universities, and the New York Public Library by 2015. This is really cool. This is not a bad thing. Personally, I think that's pretty hot. You know, provided it's free to all, I mean, that'd be really, really sexy. It is also digitizing out-of-copyright books from the UK's Oxford University. More books equals more information equals more power. But Google has been criticized for not getting explicit permission from copyright holders before scanning the text. Well, if it's out of print and nobody's reading it, you know, what are you going to do? The copyright holders don't have the right to say, no, no one can read this knowledge. I mean, they didn't write it, so fuck you. The controversy led Google to put its library project on hold in August. The pause is designed to allow publishers to tell Google which books should not be included in the scanning program. I mean, if I was Google, I'd be like, fuck you, man, whatever. I'd have my team of rabid feral lawyers that, you know, I summoned from my Le Marchand configuration, and, you know, that'd be it. But anyway, I guess Google's trying at least to be cool about it. But the delay did little to assuage concerns. In mid-October, the Association of American Publishers, which includes firms such as Penguin, filed suit in New York claiming Google is breaching copyright. Fucking Google. In separate action, the Authors Guild has filed a class action suit against Google for copyright infringement. Dun, dun, dun. Oh my God, it's the Authors Guild. Despite the pending legal action, Google is pressing ahead with its plans. On its blog, the company said it was resuming the scanning of texts, but also offers some words of reassurance. As always, the focus on our library effort is scanning books that are unique to libraries, including many public domain books, orphaned works, or out-of-print titles, said the blog. We're starting with the library stacks that mostly contain older and out-of-circulation books, but also some newer books. Now, this begs the question, what if, you know, this is where, you know, my little writer cap comes on. What if they start scanning these texts? Because when you're scanning text, what are you doing? You're popping light at it, right? You're reading the text. You got light, scanning, blah, blah, blah. So what if, you know, they get a hold of some of these restricted access library stacks? They start, you know, scanning these occult books with all these sigils and seals and everything in there, all these hardcore occult texts. And as they scan these ancient cryptic symbols, which we don't fully understand, the power of the electricity which runs in all things in the universe activates these sigils. And throughout the library, we give birth to some new consciousness inside of Google. Server could be born. It's a thought. It's a crazy thought, followed by a lot of crack, but it's still a thought. Speaking of crack, let's talk about Sony. And let's talk about Sony putting black ice in their wares. Not so good on the Sony. Take your little stupid robot and go the fuck home. Mark Russinovich of sysinternals.com has discovered a so-called root kit, quote-unquote, which is installed by Sony's new digital rights management protected music compact discs. Holy crap. So Sony's discs install this thing. A root kit is a common name for malicious software that is used by hackers or criminals. Notice how they made that distinction. That was nice of them. To gain access to a computer system and be able to clandestinely run other malicious code. However, hackers don't do that, so hackers could use it for whatever. Rootkits frequently contain hidden and hard-to-remove files that are designed to be difficult for the user to remove. Hence, hard-to-remove files that are designed to be hard to remove. Russovich classifies Sony malware as a rootkit because it is alleged to introduce several serious security holes, one of which can be exploited to hide files and prevent the user from removing them. In particular, all executable files, which begin with the $sys, are hidden when the software is installed. He points out that the security holds could be exploited by hackers or other malware producers besides Sony. Rustovich explains that naively removing the files will result in crippling the operating system of the user's computer. He provides an explanation of the difficult step required to remove Sony's malware. Well, it's not really difficult. I mean, it's the same as fucking anything else. You're just typing on a keyboard. Give me a break. Playing the same CDs on computers while not running the Windows operating system or a non-computer-based CD player remains safe. So if you're running Linux, you're okay. As removing Sony malware may violate the DMCA, ripping the CDs on computers running non-Windows operating system may be the best legal and technically safe option for those who wish to listen to them under Windows. So if you got a Linux box, you should get a CD, rip it from Sony, and then put it on your computer. Or, you know, because you're pissed off at Sony for throwing rootkits in, you can just download the music and steal it, which is probably what's going to happen. The software is automatically installed when a Sony CD is played on a computer, is not mentioned in their end-user licensing agreement. So they don't even tell you about it. All of a sudden, boom, there it is. A rootkit appears to have been commercially developed by First Four Internet and licensed to Sony. Well, isn't that nice of them not to tell anyone that they're putting, you know, evil shit on their CDs? Other rights management techniques used by music publishers recently include breaking the Redbook compact disc standard format. Breaking the Redbook, Cambo Wins. The technique caused many CD players not to be able to play the new CDs, but also protects against casual ripping, because nobody can read the CD, and therefore, you can't rip it. And why don't you sell rocks? Because that way you can sell rocks with like Fiona Apple's recent album released in the United States uses such technology. Holy crap, Fiona Apple. Well, Fiona Apple, you know, why don't you just wrap up rocks with your name and logo on it? And then that way no one can listen to your music at all. They can just listen to your shit on the radio and claim that they bought the CD, and they don't really care because they don't listen to your CD anyway, right? I mean, you know, come on now. Aren't we getting a little bit out of control with this whole digital, you know, copyright music thing? I mean, fuck, guys. When you're putting black ice on the CDs of the people that are buying your music, what are they going to do? They're not going to want to buy your music. Hello? Think a little bit, please. It'd be nice. Could I get some people thinking just a touch? Thinking would be good. Thank you. In booster news, this is always good. Now, I remember reading a while ago about melatonin. Here's another story about melatonin for those of us who happen to do shift work because, you know, we're lowlifes and we have security jobs or whatever. Maybe you travel lots, whatever. A simple at-home treatment, a single light box, an over-the-counter drug melatonin, which is actually a hormone, I don't think it's actually a drug, allows travelers to avoid jet lag by resetting their circadian body clock before crossing several time zones. Let's fuck with the circadian body clock. According to new research being published by the Endocrine Society's Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, always a riveting read, this treatment can also help those with delayed sleep phase syndrome, DSPS, a persistent condition that results from misalignment between a person's internal biological clock and external social environment. Oh, I hate it when that happens. You know what I mean? You're like, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and you're like, oh my God, the A-team's on! You know, but clearly the A-team isn't on until 8 o'clock on Tuesdays, and your internal biological clock is all fucked up. You're like, oh my God, I'm hungry, but it's not breakfast. You know, this is kind of crazy. I mean, how can your internal biological clock be fucked up? I'm tired at noon. This is a nice way of saying that you're sleepy at the wrong times. Both bright light and melatonin have successfully been used in laboratory and field settings into phase advance. Ooh, that sounds hot. Resetting the circadian clock earlier in time so that the circadian rhythms of our body occur earlier. Gee, that sounds pretty Lovecraftian, eh? Quickly, put him into the spotlight. We must reset his circadian internal clock, thereby helping people adapt to night shift work or to a new time zone following rapid transmission jet travel. Melatonin alone has been shown to synchronize the circadian clock of the blind to the 24-hour day. Well, that's a little weird. However, this is the first study to show that melatonin and bright light can both help to advance the circadian clock. And the combination of bright light and melatonin produces large phase advance rather than the bright light alone. Now, I don't really understand how the fuck you're using this bright light here, said senior author, chairman Eastman, PhD, director of Biological Rhythms Research Lab and professor of behavioral science departments at Rush University Medical Center in Chicago, who clearly is unclear of the concept. Phase advance is the resetting of a circadian clock earlier in time so that all the circadian rhythms of the body occur earlier. So what the hell does that mean? Dr. Eastman and colleagues at Rush's Biological Rhythms Research Lab studied 44 healthy adults, 24 men, 19 women, between the ages of 19 and 45 years. The participants were randomly divided into three groups and assigned one of three treatments. A placebo, 0.5 grams of melatonin, or 3 milligrams of melatonin. A couple of them were shot just for shits and giggles. Each participant was assigned a strict 8-hour sleep schedule that was similar to their typical sleeping schedule. I don't know about you, but a strict 8-hour, oh shit, you better still be sleeping. In addition, they had to remain in bed in the dark trying to sleep throughout the 8-hour scheduled sleep dark period, which would suck. On the seventh day, each person was given a baseline phase assessment starting 7 hours before the ending, 3 hours after the beginning of their bedtime. Then they slept in the lab and they were awakened at their scheduled wake time. The participants continued on the sleep schedule throughout the 10 days of the study. 11 through 13 marked the treatment period of the study, during which the participants slept in the lab in individual dark temperature controlled bedrooms. Each afternoon, each person received either 0.5 or 3 milligrams of melatonin or a matching placebo. The study ended in the final phase assessment on day 14. The researchers found that those given melatonin experienced significantly larger phase advances. How the fuck do you know this? Like, you're not tired or what? The 0.5 milligram move at 2.5, blah, 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 blah. There was slightly larger phase shift with a 3. You know, they go on here and they're just saying, you know, there's phase shift this and phase shift that. But how the fuck are you measuring this? You know? And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that, you know, none of this stuff is any good. Because melatonin, if you take it before you go to bed, man, you rack the fuck out. And then you have, like, some pretty crazy dreams, I find. I took some for a little bit. Because there was an article I ran, you know, a while ago talking about melatonin, saying it was this wonder drug. You feed it to rats, they don't die, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's all good shit. Just take the melatonin. You know, your brain produces melatonin naturally. But I'm a little bit concerned when you start pumping hormones into your brain. Very, very dangerous shit. You start doing that, pretty soon the brain gets used to the melatonin. Then you stop taking the melatonin. You start going into melatonin withdrawal. You know, you're not sleeping properly. And when you're not sleeping properly, well, insert Fight Club quote here. Not so good. It's not good to be a crazy drug person. Being a crazy drug person is bad. If you want to go and experiment with drugs, do it when you're 65. I mean, what do you got to lose? But earlier on, you know, the shit with melatonin, phase sleep, whatever. People have been surviving on night shift. Just stay up a little bit later, whatever. And then rack out at an appropriate time. I don't know about all this fucking... I don't know if these guys are just doing these researches to keep their grants up or what the score is. But I can't really condone people, you know, going out and messing around with brain hormones. Because they don't know what the long-term effects of melatonin are. That's one of the things that... I mean, everyone was touting it as, you know, this super fad, you know, fountain of youth thing. But you got to bear in mind, we don't really know what the hell melatonin does. So, you know, a little bit of moderation there. Probably go well. Now, in weather control news. Oh, my God. Weather control is back in the news. The 1-2 hurricane punch from Katrina and Wilma, which isn't really 1-2 because there's K and W. There's a lot of letters in between there. But anyway, along with predictions of more severe weather in the future. Holy shit, now there's a stretch. There'll be more severe weather in the future. Well, yeah, okay, that's a pretty, you know, that's kind of a no-brainer. Has scientists pondering ways to save lives, protect property, and possibly even control the weather? Well, I'm glad that the scientists are now pondering ways to save lives and protect property, because what were they doing before? While efforts to tame storms have so far been clouded by failure, well, I like that play on words, some researchers aren't willing to give up the fight. And even if changing the weather proves overly challenging, the residents and disaster officials can do a better job of planning and reacting. Because they can't possibly do a worse fucking job of planning and reacting, leaving people trapped on roofs for 5 fucking days. In fact, military officials and weather modification experts could be on the verge of joining forces to better gauge, react, and to possibly nullify hostile forces turned out by Mother Nature. Now, I'm waiting for the speech made by the president where he says, we're going to declare war on Mother Nature, which I really can't see anyway. He could be declaring more war on Mother Nature, what with the rainforest disappearing at a rate of 6 football fields every fucking second, while some consider the idea far-fetched. Some military tacticians have already pondered ways to turn weather into a weapon. Well, that's fantastic. How does that work with saving lives and protecting property? Oh, never mind. La, la, la. Suspend disbelief. The U.S. military, reacting in the wake of Hurricane Katrina that slammed the U.S. Gulf Coast, might be viewed as a harbinger of things to come. While in this case, it was a joint air and space operations to deal with the after-the-fact problem, perhaps the foundation for how to fend off disastrous weather may also be forming. Perhaps in May, maybe sort of kind of. Numbers of spaceborne assets were tapped. So this is what they used during this Katrina Wilbur thing. We got navigation and timing systems from global positioning systems of satellites. Oh my God, I tapped that just myself the other day. The Global Broadcasting Service, one-way space-based high-capacity broadcast communication systems. I didn't tap that, but I do have the internet. The Army's Special Operations Resource Center was used to exploit commercial remote sensing satellite imagery and prepare high-resolution images to civilian and military responders to permit better understanding of the devastating terrain. Dude with a camera. U.S. Air Force Space Command. That's just the best fucking name ever. The U.S. Air Force Space Command's Space and Missile Systems Center Defense Meteorological Satellite Program. Missile Systems Center Defense Meteorological Satellite Program. This is all one organization. The Missile Systems Center Defense Meteorological Satellite Program. What, did somebody just go crazy with the fucking, like, the adverbs here or what? Missile Systems Center. Okay, that makes sense. Missile Systems Center Defense. Okay. Meteorological Satellite Program. What the fuck does meteorological satellites have to do with Missile Systems Defense? Maybe, you know, clearly I don't know, but anyway, whatever. But they're satellites that compare the lights at night images before and after the disaster to find data on human activity. Lights at night images. So they're looking at that. Ooh, there's lights at night. So what? What are we looking at here? Looking at the images before and after. So what are they looking for? Flashlights? There's people down there. Quickly, send in Blackwater. Is it far-fetched to see in this response the embryonic stages of an integrated military civilian weather reaction and control system? Is it far-fetched to see that in response? No, because this entire article is pretty far-fetched. Use of space-based equipment to assist in cleanup operations with a look towards future prospects was recently noted by General Lance Lord, commander of the Air Force Space Command. I love that guy. I love that guy because his name is General Lance Lord. Like, who doesn't work for General Lord, you know, of the Air Force Space Command? Fuck, that's a hot title, man. Seriously. Any young kids out there, you want to know something to be, you know, you've given up on, you know, being president of the United States because, you know, he's corrupt. You don't want to be a CEO because you want to dedicate your life to making money and making other people rich. Dude, I'm here to tell you. You want to be commander of the Air Force Space Command. Now, there is a noble fucking goal. Because following in the noble footsteps of General Lance Lord, commander of the Air Force Space Command. Fuck, man. That guy's begging for a Veritech. During an October 20th Pacific Space Leadership Forum in Hawaii. Which, you know, that's got to be a hard time. You know, the October 20th Pacific Space Leadership Forum. You know, because there's enough people in space that they need to have a leadership forum. And if you're going to have a space leadership forum, what better place to do it than Hawaii, you know? Yeah, what's going on? Not much. We're the only guys up in space. Are we the leaders? You betcha. Let's go to the fucking beach. Buy some shirts. Not a problem. Incidentally, if you ever manage to get to a thrift store, make sure you only buy Hawaiian shirts that are actually made in Hawaii because they're really nice shirts. Just ask General Lance Lord of the Air Force Space Command. Fuck, that's a cool title. Anyway, I'm sorry. I got a boner for that. I do. I can totally see myself being the general in charge of the Air Force Space Command. Well, I mean, what couldn't you do with that? I mean, that's got to be hot for chicks. Of course, I don't know. Some chicks, do chicks dig space? I mean, that's a horribly sexist thing to say. But generally, you know, you go to Star Trek conventions. It's a pretty good mix. And I think it's probably like a 2-to-1 ratio male to female. There's a lot of chicks dig space, you know. But Space Command? Fuck yeah, man. That's hot. That's hot shit. Generally, chicks, I find, are a little bit more into the jets. Like, if you're going to get chicks into the Army, they like the jets. You know what I mean? Because it's like the horse thing. You know, big, powerful, mastering of powerful things, all that kind of jazz. Chicks generally dig jets. But, you know, space program, you know, that makes jets look like child's play. But what we need to do, that's what, you know, America needs. Okay, never mind another sub or another aircraft carrier. No. What we need is a space fighter. That would be the shiznit. If we could get ourselves a jet, okay, that was like carryable, launchable, whatever, but this jet could actually go to fucking space. Oh my God, that would be hot. You could like fly up and shoot down satellites and stuff. Now, I know there's some jets that can get so high that they technically go to space and all the rest of it, but I'm here to tell you. You want to get some George Bush? You want to redeem yourself? Let's get a space program. You fucked up this planet. Maybe you can go fuck up somebody else's. Now, in robot takeover news, always good. Always good to see when the robots are taking over. In Brussels, a businessman walks past a remote-controlled RoboWatch robots in Brussels. Now, I'd like to know who the asshat was who cooked up the name RoboWatch. Like, seriously, man. You know, can we get some naming going on that wasn't started in 1983? That'd be hot. Group 4 Secure Security Services Company will use the robots. Well, I mean, you know, you can't really fault. I mean, clearly, Group 4 Secure Security Services Company. That's their name. Secure. Sounds like a He-Man action figure. I'm Secure. Security Services Company will use the robots, which have cameras and movement and gas detectors, to assist their security guards. The robots are called Offro. So we've got the RoboWatch Offro robots from Secure. Now, if you're going to at least keep with that trend, they shouldn't have called it Offro. They should have called it like Deltron or something, like Deltron from I am RoboWatch Deltron or some shit. You know, Offro is just a really, you know, that's a bad name. Offro is the first. Oh, this is from their website now. When they're talking about it, you go to the link there. Offro is the first mobile security robot worldwide for outdoor surveillance. Really? Deploying in large outdoor areas as opposed to the small outdoor areas, Offro protects humans, goods and facilities around the clock regardless of weather. Holy crap. Being able to determine the actual cause of alarm, evaluate the situation, and take countermeasures, is a prerequisite in today's modern security concepts. The concept, basically, is this. If you come on the property, our robots shoot you. This applies especially to remote sites where interventions of security personnel or police involves great expense. So you drop these robots off, you know, they wander around saying, "We are the masters of Earth," and then, you know, they kill you. By means of Offro's highly sensitive sensor technology, potential perpetrators, are already recognized before they enter the premises. Potential perpetrators. Other than a great chunk of alliteration, that's also kind of entrapment. You know, you're not a person, you're not a civilian, you're not walking by. You are a motherfucking potential perpetrator. And you're already recognized before entering the premises. I know you! Countermeasures may even be initiated before the perpetrator finds access to the secured object or before he's able to approach vulnerable persons. So what does that mean exactly? Does that mean that the robot waits there, somebody's walking by their dog on the street, and it's like, you're a potential perpetrator, better attack them before they get too close. Bam! It rips a hole inside of little old lady with the little dog. Some reason I find that funny. I don't know why. You know, I got these robots lying in wait, you know, like trapdoor spiders. But don't get your hopes up. The robots look really, really weak. That's another thing, too. We need to get some people from Japan, any Japanese listeners we got going here. We need to talk to somebody about their robot designs. I mean, these robot designs are just fucking weak. I mean, we're not even up to Johnny Five level, like Short Circuit kind of stuff. Really bad. You know, I mean, oh my God. Now, Alex Jones. Everybody loves Alex. You gotta love Alex. Crazy mud hut psycho Christian that he is. You gotta love Alex. You know, because, I mean, even though you may not agree with his religious practices, and you might think that he's just slightly fucking insane, he does point out some pretty interesting stuff. For example, in this 7-7 news, 7-7 is the rhyming to 9-11, 9-11-7-7, hut, bingo! One of the suicide bombers who attacked London on the 7th of July was filmed arguing with the cashier about being shortchanged hours before he blew himself up, the London Independent reported yesterday. So Buddy was arguing about some change before he supposedly was going to go blow himself the fuck up. Now, that could be said that he was just maintaining cover, you know, business as usual. A Metropolitan Police counterterrorism expert also told the seminar that the four terrorists, Mohammed Sadiq Khan, Saad Tawazir, Jermaine Lindsay, and Hasib Hussain, and these guys were 30, 22, 19, and 18, did not fit the preconceived terrorist profile. They didn't fit it. Does that mean that they weren't terrorists? No. It just means the preconceived terrorist profile might be fucked. The official told the seminar, held in Preston, Lancaster 2 weeks ago, This is not the behavior of a terrorist. You'd think this is normal. Tan Weir also played a game of cricket the night before he traveled down to London. Now, are these actions of someone who's going to blow themselves up the next day? Maybe he's got a boner for cricket. I've seen the CCTV footage of these people. They do not appear to be on their way to commit any crime at all. The Russell Square bomber, Hasib Hussein, is actually seen going into shops, bumping into people prior to his attack. An image taken from a closed-circuit TV footage shows Shazid Tawir and Jermaine Lindsay at King's Cross Underground Station in central London. These revelations are yet more evidence to suggest the so-called suicide bombers had little or no idea they were going to die on 7-7. So let's take a look at some of the other evidence that he says he's got here. The bombers bought round-trip train tickets and paying for long-term parking. According to Asperger's, who had been briefed by police, they parked a rental car outside the train station and paid to park for 7 days, then purchased round-trip tickets to London. Now, it's entirely possible they didn't know they were going to be suicide bombers. Okay, so if they just, you know, there was somebody else involved, they put the bombs down, and wham! Bombs were left in the car. If you're going to use 4 bombs in 4 locations, blowing yourself up in the process, why would you leave extra bombs in your hire car for the police to find? That's a good point. Also, one of the bombers had spent a lot recently repairing his car. Weird. No suicide notes or videotape messages for their families have surfaced, as has happened in attacks elsewhere. Filmed by closed-circuit cameras at the station, these 4 men looked, the police said, like happy hikers, laughing and joking as they carrying heavy bags. Interesting. Cash, cards, and driver's license belonging to Hasib Hussein were found among the ruins, November 30th bus. Documents belonging to his named friends were also discovered at the underground bomb sites. Why would suicide bombers carry personal documents? Were they under the impression they would be traveling somewhere else after they blew themselves up? Plus, how is it that paper documents can survive bomb blasts that rip apart steel and people? Well, that is possible. Why did Hasib Hussein bomb detonate later, and why was he on a bus? His chosen route was closed, but he could have simply gone to another tube. There were reports of a man on the number 30 bus rummaging frantically in his bag just before the explosion. Did Hussein hear about the explosions and panic? It was also revealed that he stopped for a Big Mac, a portrait of a really hardcore Muslim feminist who hates Western values, visiting McDonald's before blowing himself up. Well, he's got a point there. Number 7. How very convenient that all the sub-suspect patsies should have been blown up in their own attacks, even though their last words was the attacks were not suicide bombings, but synchronized timed bombings. I see. Tube survivor Bruce Late told media the bomb was under the train. The policeman said, "Mind that hole, that's where the bomb was." The metal was pushed upwards as if the bomb was underneath the train. They seem to think the bomb was left in the bag, but I don't remember anybody being where the bomb was or any bag. Another credible source, Guardian journalist Mark Hogansbaum, talked to eyewitnesses at the Edgar Road bombing who essentially described the same thing. Eyewitness told Hogansbaum that the covers on the floor of the train, suddenly flew up, raising up. Interesting. The claim from an Al-Qaeda group that the bombers were working for them was proven to be a hoax. So the Al-Qaeda, you know, this all could have been just, was this an SAS thing? Was this an MI5 thing? I think it probably was. The bombers have been described as 4 nice lads, normal kids who played basketball and kicked the ball around. One was the son of a fish and chip shop owner. One was a primary teacher. Their immediate family of one of the bombers, a 20-year-old sports science graduate, has been quoted as saying they could not comprehend why he had become a mass murderer. So there's something very seriously fucked up here with the whole, bombing thing in 7-7. These things are not adding up, you know. Doesn't really make a lot of sense. And plus, you know, London's been getting bombed forever. What do? Oh, they freak the fuck out, don't they? 7-7. You know how many bombs have gone off in pubs and hotels and shit like that from the IRA? Does anybody make, you know, dates and times? Can you remember a bomb blast? Any other date? Just lay it on me here. They didn't have a catchy name like 7-7. Mind you, there's just as people getting ripped to shit by IRA bombs, I'll tell you. But no. It's Flavor Terrorist of the Week. Now, here is a really sexy piece of cyberpunk kit. And when I say cyberpunk kit, I really do mean cyberpunk kit. Vision Care Incorporated, an Israeli company, has developed an implantable miniature telescope, thought to be a permanent solution for vision loss due to age-related macular degeneration. The device is currently in phase 2/3 clinical trials and has already shown positive results. These are little tiny actual telescopes you put in your retina. This is crazy shit. The prosthetic telescope, together with the cornea, acts as a telephoto system to enlarge images 3 times or 2.2 times, depending on the device model used. The telephoto effect allows images in the central visual field, straight-ahead vision, not to be focused directly on the damaged macula, but over other healthy areas of the central and peripheral retina. This generally helps to reduce the blind spot and impairing vision in patients with AMD, hopefully improving their ability to recognize images that were either difficult or impossible to see. The prosthetic telescope is implanted by an ophthalmic surgeon in an outpatient surgical procedure, so it's not even a big deal. The device is implanted in one eye, which provides central vision as described above, while the non-implanted eye provides peripheral vision for mobility and navigation. After the surgical procedure, the patient participates in a structured vision rehabilitation program to maximize their ability to perform daily activities. Situated in the eye, the device allows patients to use natural eye movements to scan the environment and reading materials. But it does actually act as a very serious telescope. Pretty cool. Pretty goddamn cool. I gotta tell you, I like seeing stuff like that. You know, I mean, it makes me feel a little bit better about technology. Maybe it's not all evil. But you can bet that that's probably going to be used for, you know, the military pretty fast. Now, here's a funny story, and I don't really know what to make of this one. Maybe you can tell me, I don't know. In Psy News, PSI, the uncanny ability of blind people to sense unseen objects has been demonstrated for the first time in sighted volunteers whose vision was blanked out by scientists. Findings suggest that blind sight, which has been observed in blind people whose eyes function normally but who have suffered damage to the brain's vision center, is a real and not imagined phenomenon. In tests, the blind have been able to distinguish basic shapes of objects they cannot see, as well as their orientation and direction of motion. On other occasion, a blind person has reported experiencing a feeling that an object is present while not being able to see it. A number of theories have been proposed to explain blind sight. Generally, it is suggested other parts of the brain, besides the primary visual cortex, respond to nerve messages from the eyes at an unconscious level, which is probably the truth. Scientists from the University of Houston in Texas temporarily blinded a group of 12 volunteers by using an electromagnetic field to shut down their primary visual cortex. Jesus Christ! Didn't you just, you know, give them a blindfold? Images were flashed in front of them on a screen. In one experiment, volunteers were shown either a horizontal or vertical bar. In another, a red or green dot appeared. Most of the time, the volunteers were unaware of the images with which they were presented, but they guessed either the orientation of the bar or the color of the dark correctly more than often would have been expected by the law of averages. Well, you know, I don't know, we'll have to find out about that. The researchers wrote in the Journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, despite unawareness of these targets, performance on forced choice discrimination tasks for orientation and color were both significantly above chance. They said that the findings suggest that a visual pathway bypassing the primary visual cortex could be responsible for blind sight. Now, what if you could apply this to something other than sight? Now, bear with me here. What if you were a mechanic? Now, everybody knows these guys have been mechanics for 10 million years, right? Or guys working on computers all the time, you know, troubleshooting that kind of stuff. What if there was a way that you could, just kind of sense what was wrong and then go for it? This whole concept of being a sign mechanic. Maybe it works on some things other than sight. Maybe you can use it as sort of a precognition thing. Just a thought. Just something to think about. And in Walmart war news, kind of like this. Bentonville, Arkansas, October 26th. Inside a stuffy, windowless room here, veterans of the 2004 Bush and Kerry presidential campaign sit, stand, and pace around 6 plastic folded tables. Open containers of pistachio nuts and tropical trail mix compete for space with laptops and blackberries. CNN flickers on a television in the corner. The phone rings, and a 20-something woman answers. Turn on Fox, she yells, and running up to the TV with a notepad, this could be important. A scene from a campaign war room? Well, sort of. It's a war room inside of the headquarters for Walmart, the giant discount retailer that hopes to sell a new and improved images to reluctant consumers. Now, I don't really think Walmart really needs to worry much because, well, they have the lowest prices and people are sheep and they'll just simply go where the lowest prices are. Walmart is taking a page from the modern political playbook, under fire from well-organized opponents who have hammered the retailer with criticism about his wages, health insurance, and treatment for workers. Walmart has quietly recruited formal presidential advisors, including Michael K. Deaver, who is Ronald Reagan's image meister, and Leslie Dock, one of Bill Clinton's media consultants, to set up a rapid response public relations team in Arkansas. Jesus Christ. When small business owners or union officials, also employing political operatives from past campaigns, criticize the company, the war room swings into action with press releases, phone calls to reporters, and instant web postings. One target of the effort are swing votes, or consumers who have not soured on Walmart. The new approach appears to reflect that Walmart's critics are alienating the very consumers it needs to keep on growing. The new approach appears to reflect the fear that Walmart's critics are alienating the very consumers it needs to keep growing, especially middle-income Americans, motivated not just by price, but by image. Image. The first big challenge of the strategy will come November 1 with the premiere of an unflattering documentary, Walmart, the High Cost of a Low Price, which was made on a shoestring budget of $1.8 million and be released in about 24 theaters. But its director, Robert Greenwald, hopes to show the movie in thousands of homes and churches in the next month. Possibly that it might become a cult hit like Michael Moore's 1999 unsympathetic portrait of General Motors. Roger and me, Walmart worried. So Walmart has embarked on a counteroffensive that would have been unthinkable even a year ago. Relying on previews posted online, Walmart investigates the events described in the film and produced a short video contending the film has factual errors. Mr. Greenwald denies there are errors, saying that Walmart has not seen the final cut. Walmart has also begun to promote a second film, Why Walmart Works and Why That Makes Some People Crazy, which casts the company in a rosier light. Walmart declined to make its executives available for the Greenwald film, but it participated with the second film's director, Ron Galloway. I see. So they paid to make their own anti-propaganda film. The War Room team helped distribute a letter written by Mr. Galloway that challenges Mr. Greenwald to show the two movies side by side. So clearly there's some shit going on with this movie that has Walmart freaked out. I think it might be an idea to go check out The High Cost of Low Prices, because anything that has got Walmart this scared has got to have some kind of basis in fact. Today's Daily Hack, thanks to Sony, well, actually thanks to Make a Prog Man, is Rootkit Revealer. It's an advanced patent-pending rootkit detection utility. Runs on Windows NT 4 and higher, and it outputs lists of registry and file system API discrepancies that may indicate the presence of a user mod or kernel mode rootkit. Make sure you download that. Check it out so you can keep your box secure. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This would be a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 11 one-time donators, 52 continuing subscribers, and 2 new subscribers for a total of 65 subscribers and donators for the month of October 2005. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the Donate tab. Thanks again to everyone in their assistance gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any of their pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album Iconoclast. It's a split album and very, very cool. I'm going to leave you now with a track by the Beach Boys called I Get Around, which is always good and good fun. So until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line.
Round, round, get around. I get around.
Yeah, get around, round, round. I get around.
I get around. Get around,
round, round. I get around.
Getting real well known. Yeah, the bad guys know us and they leave us alone. cause it's never been beat. And we've never missed yet with the girls we meet. None of the guys go steady cause it wouldn't be right to leave your best girl alone on a Saturday night. I get around.
Get around,
I get around,
yeah, get around, round.